You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Welcome, thank you for coming.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Caitlin.
Hi. So let's start by saying, again, thank you for coming to the live show. We're talking about The Notebook. You have been given Bechdel cast
bingo boards.
Cards.
We gotta say boards.
Bingo boards.
I keep
Bechdel bingo board.
I had this whole plan where I was gonna keep saying bingo board moment. Just in the now, but also in the future. It's like, I think we're gonna have all these bingo board moments when we're like together.
We for sure will.
Right. Okay. So you got bingo boards.
So we're gonna be talking for a while, and if we say anything, you've got your boards, you've got your writing utensils. The first person to, I guess, the rules of bingo is a diagonal, horizontal, or vertical.
Yeah.
Five in a row. Yell out Bechdel.
That was Aristotle's idea.
Yeah.
And now everyone can
shout
cross that
out
on
to Aristotle. Find it on your board.
So, yeah, I mean, get creative. Between Caitlin and I, we have about 25 thoughts that go on a loop, and they're all on that bingo board. So,
right. So the winner will get a prize.
Yeah.
Shout out to our fan, at Danny Cavalier, who created this Bechdel bingo board. So thank you.
It was
We're
really
utilizing
cool.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he was like, to prove the concept, I've re-listened to 12 episodes and lost bingo at all of them. So, but you guys are going to win.
Someone's going to win. Anyway.
All right. By a round of applause, has everybody here seen, give it up if you've seen The Notebook? All right. We've got some horny people in the audience. I like it. Clap it up if you have not seen The Notebook. Don't be ashamed. Ooh.
Yes.
Okay. So we've got a few people. Okay, cool. We've got a lot to talk about. If you haven't seen The Notebook, we will, Caitlin is extremely good at recapping things. So we will guide you through it, and we're gonna have a killer time. I'm so excited for our guest too.
Yes, she's bring her out.
Yeah,
she's a comedian. You know her from our Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid episode already.
Duh.
And she wrote for the upcoming Misfits and Monsters. It's going to be coming out on True TV. Give it up for Caitlin Gill.
Okay, thank you.
Two Caitlins
two
in
Caitlins.
One stage.
I don't know how similar our voices are, but I am Caitlin Gill.
Yes, and I am Caitlin Durante.
I don't know
we
if
forgot
that helps.
To introduce ourselves.
Oh, I'm Lil Jamie. I just
it.
Show up to have fun.
I'm Caitlin Gilf, the roller skating grandma you'd like to fuck. Right?
Love it.
Oh my gosh. First of all, I'm looking over your shoulder, Caitlin. Durante. Oh God. Okay. I'm looking over your shoulder, Caitlin Durante, as I always am. Mm-hmm. And you've got how many pages of notes today?
Seven.
Seven pages. And I'm sorry.
You might say that's a full notebook. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was a full discussion. 11-point font.
Yeah.
What's your spacing at? 1.5?
One, baby.
Jeez.
Margins are slim. Caitlin's got a lot of thoughts on this. I have exactly... I don't want to give you a bingo board moment. Whatever.
Do it.
First of all, a man just yelled, do it to me, and I'm going to kill him. No, I'm kidding. I did, for all you bingo boarders out there, I did watch this movie this morning. So,
well done.
And I have exactly... 8 bullet points.
I brought out a bottle of water, but I peeled the label off so I knew which one was mine. That's how prepared I am. That's not true. I also watched the movie.
Varying degrees of preparedness.
A vast spectrum of preparedness.
I watched the movie 3 times. So
Jesus
brag.
Christ. For the podcast. Let's clarify. You have seen it many times independently.
Only a couple before this.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, don't. Well.
That's fair. Honestly,
we're
that's
feuding.
Fair.
That's fair.
Feud.
Alfred Molina's in Feud. All
right. We're just giving them away
we're
now.
We're bingo boarding hard. Alfred Molina. Okay, I will just get it out at the top. Alfred Molina in this movie could have played Rachel McAdams' twirly mustache dad.
For sure. For sure.
Because the mother is a big character, and we'll talk about her a lot. But twirly mustache dad is in it for like 3 seconds, and he's always just like... doing a twirly, he's like, you know, talking to a poor boy, I see. And that's like all he does. Like,
there's one scene where he talks to a poor man and another scene where he talks to a sandwich with like crayfish on
it. He does talk to a sandwich. Does it pass the Bechdel test if a guy with a twirly mustache talks to a sandwich? I suggest we revise the rules.
What does that mustache smell like?
Hey, I guess speaking of the Bechdel test, I wonder, just out of curiosity, is there anyone who has never listened to an episode of the Bechdel cast and are therefore very confused by everything that's happened so far?
Don't be afraid. They're nice.
Oh, we've got a little hand.
Okay, he's
a, what if he really
welcome
had a little
to the
hand?
Party.
Hello, he's got a regular size hand. Thank you. did someone bring you?
Hi.
Wow. You have a good roommate.
Okay, well welcome. Welcome. So we will define the Bechdel cast for you and you alone.
The Bechdel cast is
indefinable. Fluid, beautiful, gorgeous. Mm. The test does have several interpretations. We use a very specific one.
Yes, the Bechdel test is applied to, for our sake, movies. It requires that there are two women who have names, their characters have names, they speak to each other, and their conversation cannot be about a man. That is the test. The Bechdel cast, that's our sort of jumping off point. We talk about the portrayal of women in movies, one movie at a time.
I do think it's funny that sometimes people are like, oh yeah, that's just the podcast where you decide. I'm like, do you think we take an hour deciding? If one conversation takes place
tonight, I feel like we could though.
Because we started a pre-debate.
We did.
We warmed up.
Yeah, I asked whether or not you guys think the Notebook passes the test.
Mm-hmm.
And
we'll let's save it.
Save it.
It's
going to
be a twist.
I knew as soon as I started this segue, I was like, these two have a plan, and I. I'm like trying to be the hotshot guest, all like, hey guys, how about I guide our conversation a little bit? You have 7 pages of 11 font note with slim margins.
Caitlin has basically brought a manifesto.
And she's I'm here like, why don't I throw
Unabomber.
Out a pitch for a topic? You've got this covered. We'll get there.
I think that, you're the Unabomber. I'm the Unabomber's friend.
He didn't have any. Una.
I had, you're right.
I know that doesn't mean one. I just wanted it to mean one. It means university bomber, because that's where he started. He was ruined in a university. Anyway, don't.
Speaking of universities.
Shout out to Kaczynski. I have a Kaczynski sweatshirt.
I was robbed of a Bechdel bingo board moment.
Oh, no.
When I said, speaking of universities.
Take it home. Take it home, Dream.
Go ahead.
I do have a master's degree from Boston University.
Oh, wait. What?
In screenwriting.
From where?
From Boston University.
God damn.
That's Unabomber adjacent.
A master's degree, indeed. Okay, let's talk about The Notebook, shall we?
The Notebook, yes.
Caitlin, you saw it recently.
Yes, I had not seen The Notebook, and I did for this podcast, so that tells you how deeply I'm willing to sacrifice for the two of you.
Thank you so much.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Jamie, when did you first see it?
I watched this movie with my grandma on TNT. Let's say in 2007.
Sure.
I think
it feels right.
We watched it with commercials in Massachusetts in 2007. I remember at that time I was like, this is dumb. I know love is. I was like a big Hot Topic shopper and
didn't really believe in love if it wasn't directly related to Jack and Sally. So
so I did see the Notebook, didn't care for it, and didn't see it again until this morning. And I watched it twice and I cried so much.
Did you?
I loved it. I got very, and I've become a very emotional adult. No, but I did, and I saw it, and I was, this was one of those episodes where I was fully going in expecting to unequivocally hate, have a problem with every element of this movie, and there's mistakes were certainly made. We will discuss them. But it did far better than I expected, because I forgot almost everything.
Right, yes. Yeah. So I think that takes us to the recap, and then we'll get into the discussion. So The Notebook, if you have not seen it, we open on two old people, Duke and unnamed old woman who lives in a nursing home.
They call him Duke because they're just like, what if it's not Ryan Gosling, parentheses old?
Right? Yeah, it's confusing. I guess that's his nickname,
Duke. We could have used a nickname reveal toward the end of the movie.
They never.
They didn't do that. It would have been handy if you'll get there in the recap. But there would have been a time to give him a nickname. And frankly, I want to know why they call him Duke. There's a story. That doesn't come out of nowhere. You don't just read in the paper one day. You're Duke now.
He's never referred to as Duke in the earlier events of the movie.
Nope.
So something happens between ages like 25 and 70. He becomes Duke.
Midlife crisis, buys a boat. Call me Duke.
Yeah, exactly. So our friend Duke visits this old woman and he reads her a story from The Notebook. A Notebook.
Oh, right.
Did you just figure out why the movie is called The Notebook?
I wouldn't say it was a notebook as much as it was a leather-bound journal, but that's not...
The leather-bound journal in theaters, Valentine's Day.
I just figured that out. Yeah.
The Notebook, 100%. 100% uh-huh. Makes sense.
That makes me deeply happy.
So Duke reads this woman a story from the book.
The leather-bound moleskin.
The story is about Noah and Allie. They are a couple of young people who meet for the first time in 1940. Noah is poor. He's a poor boy, and he works at a lumber yard.
When do we want to introduce the fact that this is, like, Titanic, basically? There's a lot of... As you go through the recap... Oh, God, these fucking bingo borders. I don't know why we gave it to you. Sorry. We're like, so gross of you to participate like we asked. But as you listen through the recap, there's so many parallels that we will break down in detail.
We sure will. So Allie, in the meantime, is a rich girl and her family is in town for the summer. Noah pursues Allie, and she is resistant at first, and we will 100% talk about it.
He's got a little newsies hat.
He's wearing a hat.
He sure does.
I love like the interesting little choices that people will make to make an actor who's clearly like in his late 20s seem like a teenager. He's like, I just put a little newsies hat on him.
Yeah.
Just look young.
Make those pants baggier. That'll cut off about 5 years.
Have him slouch a little bit and go, oh man. Yeah.
So he's pursuing her. She is not into it at first, but eventually he wins her over and then they start dating. But it's the summer before she's going to leave for college. So she's about to leave for college and they break up because he's like, I don't see how we're going to make it work. I'm too poor. And then a few years pass. Noah buys his like old plantation house. And meanwhile,
he also goes to World War II. Ever heard of it? Everyone's on their bingo boards like, is World War II on there? World War II reference on the bingo board. He goes to war. His friend dies. He comes back.
He comes back and he buys this old plantation home that he was like, Allie and I are going to live here because we're going to be together forever. Psych, but that is what happens.
Caitlin.
Sorry, I've spoiled everything. So he makes this house all nice, and then someone takes a picture of it in the paper, and then Allie sees it, except that meanwhile she's found another man.
James Marsden.
Yes.
Okay, some people will disagree. I think Gosling to Marsden, upgrade. That's what I think.
Yes.
Yeah, James Marsden is like
cartoonishly handsome, which is why he plays a cartoon prince.
We can talk about what an upgrade not only that actor is, but that character.
Yes,
yeah.
Oh, the character.
Because goddamn.
Majorly. James Marsden, God, it's like... Like, what does he do to his eyebrows, or are they just like that? It's just crazy. It's amazing.
One of the parallels to Titanic is that he has great eyebrows. Cal Hockley, great eyelashes. All right.
What if Billy Zane was in both of these movies? What if he was the connecting thread?
So The Notebook.
The Notebook, a movie about a notebook.
So, like, she sees his picture in the paper. She faints because women be fainting.
Oh, yeah.
And then...
In her wedding dress, she faints. Yeah.
And she decides to go and see him, to pay him a visit, because it's been 7 years and their relationship broke off kind of abruptly. Oh, and there's a whole thing where he wrote her a letter every single day for a year, and her mom intercepted all those letters, so she never got them, and she didn't know that he was writing to her.
Which, honestly, you lazy. Check the mail once a year.
Yeah.
One time!
Get up here. Get up earlier.
And you, you see the mom getting the mail, and it's like, yeah, it's about 2 p.m.
It's daytime. She's fully dressed. This ain't early.
It's not like she has the mail guy delivering stuff on the low. He's delivering it regularly.
Right. So she approaches him and she's like, hey, how are you? And he's like, I've been drunk for a long time.
To be fair, he's lost everyone in his life.
His dad and Fabrizio.
And basically. We'll get there. His name's Finn, but it's like his name's Fabrizio, and he died in 1912. Why is he in this movie?
So Allie and Noah reconnect, but she's like, oh, do I stay with my James Marsden fiance?
Just so you know, Caitlin Gill is fully...
I was making the finger inserted into the fist sex implication motion, because mm-hmm. they do it. That's when they do it. That's the part of the movie where they do it.
It's true.
If you were looking to fast forward to a really boring milquetoast love scene, that's... You got to go to about 2/3.
Not even a nippy.
Like there was going to be a nippy. I'm frankly relieved.
So yes, they have sex. And she's like, wait a minute. Do I stay with Lon, my James Marsden fiance? Or
oh, yeah. Lon is James Marsden.
Rich.
For the purpose of this podcast, we'll be calling him James Marsden, obviously. Yes.
Or do I go back with Noah, Ryan Gosling? And honestly, because he makes her come and James Marsden doesn't.
That we know of.
Well,
we don't see it.
Well, after they have sex, she's like, so that's what I've been missing?
I
interpreted that as like losing her purity. I definitely thought she had a nipple between her knees until she went back to see Noah. But that's a very different interpretation that does have different sort of offspring. I think that was her.
I think she was having really boring sex.
Okay, so I would buy that she was basically telling James Marsden that she was a virgin and wanted to wait for marriage.
I don't even know if that was like a little fake. 1940s proper shit. Like, this is a dude who asked her parents first and all that. Like,
yeah.
Lon was also a gentleman.
I
can't say for sure. It's just that was my interpretation. Because there was nothing about that sex scene that implied in any way that she would come from what he was doing. I do not believe.
Well, she was like
that he had the focus or dexterity to accomplish that.
No, it sounded a little jokey when she's like, so that's what I've been missing out on this whole time. And then he turns to her and is like, yeah.
It's also the kind of love scene where someone strong is carrying someone tiny, which inevitably ends in the tiny person being pressed up against a wall. And in this case, it was like a cabinet. There was nothing. You cannot come with a handle sticking in your back. And like, yeah, okay, cool. You drag me, like, we're off the wall now, and now we're just in your ghostly-ass plantation trying to fuck in the same room we couldn't fuck in when we were 17. What, do you remember how romantic it was to go back to where you first tried to fuck when you were 17? Drive your car to your parents' driveway and just sit in it fumbling? Yeah, hard pass. Hard pass.
Yeah, because we should all go back to that 01 Ford Focus that we were all in at one time.
Okay, so might have misinterpreted what happened.
No, I think that's open.
Either way.
Are we in the recap?
We're still at the recap. So she is like, yeah, I'm going to pick Noah because he's my first love. And
she does confront her mom about the whole letter thing. And her mom was like, shrug.
And her mom,
right?
Her mom reveals that not only did she hide the letters, but she did it in spite of the fact that she herself harbored a young summer love, that she still occasionally goes back to watch work in his rock quarry from her fucking convertible Plymouth with her like Gucci's on or whatever, if that was a thing in 47, just watching this dude like shovel rocks,
that was,
I guess,
and
that was looks at her daughter like, I love your father, but I'd still fuck that gravel guy any day.
That was the question I had, because at the end of that scene, he looks over and I'm like, does he recognize her? And he's like,
that poor dude.
Yeah, we used to hook up, and now 40 years later, she still comes and stares at me shovel rocks sometime. In case you're wondering if I've got that good dick or not. Women be staring at me shoveling rocks 4 decades on.
Wax mustache guy outside like shoveling the driveway like, I don't know why she asked me to do this. She is so aroused when I come back in.
I feel like wax mustache guy comes like coins, or like, because he looks like an extra from The Greatest Showman. Like he fully looks like a magician who's gotten lost. He's just, but she said she loves him.
Yeah.
So the mom takes Allie to the quarry or whatever, and is like, I too once loved a poor. And that's basically the end of their
arc. And then she's like, make the right choice.
And then drops her daughter off at the fully restored plantation mansion the poor lives in. So I think, hard air quotes around poor at home, listeners.
Right. So, and then at some point in the story, it's revealed, remember Duke and the old woman who is hearing the story? Turns out Duke is Noah and the old lady is Allie.
No way.
Wow.
Everyone, what a total shocker.
I'm sorry,
what
the audience
audible
is not
gasp.
Gasping.
But
wow.
The reason that he is recounting this story to her is that she has dementia and she's lost her memory. So he reads the story to her to help her remember their love for each other.
From the notebook, it turns out.
From the notebook, the leather-bound journal. And then sometimes it works and she remembers. And then they die together.
I totally forgot that
there's this like rapid fire 15 minute ending where like she remembers, she sundowns, he has a heart attack, he goes to see her in the ward that she's now trapped in because he's not there to read to her, I guess. He like shuffles out and a nurse is like, sir, you're not allowed to walk around, but I'm definitely gonna leave to get coffee and let you, wink wink. He goes in to see his ailing wife who wakes up in full cognizance. Hi honey, good to see you, Noah.
Yeah.
Hey, do you think our love could kill us together? He crawls into bed and that poor nurse comes back to work in the morning like, I can't whistle into the microphone, but she is 1,000% whistling,
break.
Carrying a cup of coffee like, I wonder where those old people who are in love are, pushes open the door, corpses. Blackout. Credits roll. Sorry, there are birds first, and then credits roll.
A lot of swans, yeah.
A
lot of birds. I thought they were geese, and I was like, are we to believe that Ryan Gosling has been a goose?
Apparently we are. We missed the, we didn't, you can't recap the birds, but the movie opens on this, like, I love to notice in a movie, like, when the editor's name pops up in the opening credits, like, what scene was there? Because that's obviously a choice. The editor chooses that. Or, like, director of photography. And all of them are just, like, glorious birds. Like, everyone who edited or had, a say in how the picture looks opens to swans soaring. The movie goes through, and they're at the beach, and Allie's like, what if I was reincarnated as a bird? And I was like, that's weird, except fine, you're a bird, I'm a bird. And then when Allie comes back to see Noah after he's rebuilt the house, he's like, come with me. I'm not going to tell you where, but it's probably dangerous. I consistently endanger you. And then took her on a boat to see ducks. They look at ducks. It rains. Then
at
the end, it's like, let's die together. They die together. Camera pulls out of the nursing home, fucking birds. Like, did we
birds.
Need this bookend? I hope a camera, like a B-unit camera guy got shot on so hard.
I hope that there is someone in the theater in 2004 who just like wailed like, and there's birds! Like at the end. Like that really made, that tied the movie together for them.
I will say, I decided to view that from like a Bitter Henri lens. There's no reason to. It is beautifully shot. It's some gorgeous imagery. Way to go. Like, yeah, be a bird. I guess that's a very free way to imagine your dead parents, which is what that movie makes you do at the end. So cool. Yeah, oh, great.
Here's another question I had, because there is a moment in the old people's story where all of their kids and grandkids show up, but Allie doesn't realize that because she has dementia. And so Duke is just like... Duke, I like to think he joined a middle-aged man's basketball league, and he's like, I'm Duke.
But, he got Duke's jersey from last year, and he's Duke now.
there's like a brief conversation after Allie takes her nap, or she leaves the scene, and all the kids are talking to Noah, and they're like, oh, Mom doesn't remember us. I'm like, have you read this weird, long, handwritten story about your parents fucking? Like, do they know the Notebook story? I feel like they all do. I feel like they all know, like, hey, when we first tried to lose our virginity, it was confusing. But 10 years later, we raw-dogged hard.
I hope there's some explanation for why those kids were so fucked up and cold. They're seriously only in the movie to be like, Mom doesn't recognize me. And then immediately be like, Dad, leave Mom. She's boring. We'll help. Like, and they don't. And then they just take off, never to be seen again.
That was the part in the movie where I genuinely, because it is for some reason intentionally ambiguous for a while who the identity of the old man is, once the kids were so like, fuck her, leave her, I was like, maybe he's actually James Marsden. And the kids know that their dad has no self-respect and that she's been in love with Ryan Gosling the whole time, and they're like, Dad, you've blown your life on this lady.
Like, James Marsden has to go read the book about how she fell in love with Ryan Gosling to get her to remember him.
Every single day. He has to be like, so you want to hear the story about how you don't love me again? Although, you know, I wouldn't put it past Marsden. He's a class act.
Yeah. All right, so on to...
So in this page of Caitlin's notes, there's some highlighting and there's different shades. There's a... What would you call this? A table?
Do you have a chart going?
It's a bit of a...
It's a lavender shaded box.
It's a box.
It's a very...
So what
mood.
I've done here... So the first thing I wanted to talk about is the first 15 minutes of the movie and how problematic they are.
I will quote my girlfriend here, who watched this with me. I love her so much. Thank you. That was very kind of you.
Give it up for love.
Yeah. Kelly, let's die in the same senior home gurney someday.
Yeah. I'm just scouting hands to hold whilst I die.
Get right in that notebook, girl. But she looked over and she was like, so get ready, because I'm pretty sure this movie is responsible for all the problems that women have had with men for the past 14 years. Like, this problematic setup, this 15 minutes, is why men are so confused about what we actually want and why women are letting dudes crawl onto their carnival rides, I guess.
Right. Yeah, walk us through it, Caitlin, because it the first 15 minutes is like, whew.
So we open in 1940, they're at a carnival. Noah sees Allie from a distance. She's riding bumper cars. He's
a precursor to her dementia. I'm pretty sure we witnessed her getting the CTE that caused her later brain trauma.
This is
I think that's foreshadowing as hard
what
as those birds.
Payoff. Yeah. Amazing.
You can map this scene directly on Titanic as well for when Jack sees Rose for the first time on the Titanic deck at a distance and is like, who is rich girl? And then, and then his friend is like, that is rich girl. She is rich. And then he says, me must have her. That basically happens in this scene as well.
Yes, indeed. So he's leering at her. She gets out of her bumper car. He like runs up to her and says, do you want to dance? She responds, no. Why not? Because I don't want to. And then they go off.
Why aren't women
do a
clear?
Ferris wheel.
Jeez. So fucking ambiguous. Ugh, I don't want to. What could that possibly mean?
So then they get on a Ferris wheel, Allie and this other guy, and Noah jumps onto the seat that they are in, and she screams, ah, get off me, don't touch me. And then he
just
introduces himself. They're like, go away. And the Ferris wheel operator is like, you can't sit there. And he stops the Ferris wheel. So in order to resolve that situation, he climbs out of the seat and hangs
Ryan Gosling,
from
not
a bar.
Ferris wheel guy.
Right. Noah hangs from probably 30 to 40 feet in the air.
His newsies cap totally intact.
The Ferris wheel operator is just like, yes, fine. This is not a liability. I will let this happen.
I definitely shouldn't have just waited for their car to come to the ground before I stopped the ride. I made a good eye plan by stopping it while he was suspended in midair.
Right.
Also, there's this other guy in the scene with Allie the whole time who we understand to be like her friend.
Right.
Who is demonized by the movie hard as like when Noah first is like, dance with me. And she's like, no. And then the guy's like, hey, leave her alone. Like, the movie would have you believe,
what an asshole.
Right. I'm like, no, that's her. That's someone she knows.
Right. Yeah. So he's now hanging from a Ferris wheel 40 feet in the air.
Romantic.
He says, now will you go out with me? She says, what? No. No? No. No. And then his friend's like,
we're
hey,
just going to let you play all parts.
Yes, please. The friend who the movie thinks is an asshole is like, hey, pal, she just told you.
Boo.
Noah says, why not? Allie says, I don't know because I don't want to. And then he lets go of one hand and now he's dangling.
He's like, well, I guess I'll fucking kill myself then.
Super stable. No red flags here.
And then E from Entourage is like, just go out with him.
That's Fabrizio.
Right. Finn. Also.
This is so confusing.
So then she, because he's threatening to kill himself, placates him by being like, okay, fine, I'll go out with you.
Although we could end the movie right here. So weird. This poor guy approached me and like
and then said died.
And then just like killed himself. Just fell from a Ferris wheel to his death. Anyways, I'm going to Sarah Lawrence next year.
And then he's all smug about it and he's just like, oh, don't do me any favors. Like, fine, I'll go out with you. And then she takes his pants off, which I don't know what to make of that. We can get into it later.
She's trying to get some sort. I mean, I was like, at least she did something to give herself the upper hand. I don't understand. Right. I was like, did she take his dick out in like 1940? She didn't. She didn't. Yeah, that whole scene is a nightmare and is like totally textbook giving young men the wrong idea and giving young women the wrong idea of like, here's the beginning to a beautiful love story.
Right.
Of this a man is going to be the rest of your life. You're going to become a swan with this man. For sure.
Right. Like if a guy harasses you having never met you and he's wearing a horrendous hat, this is the man who will hold your hand as you die. Like, it's not good.
Right, because then in the next scene, he sees her walking down the street. He sprints up to her and is like, oh, I'm really sorry. That was stupid for me to crawl on a Ferris wheel, but I had to do it. I was drawn to you.
I thought he was about to say, like, I was very drunk or high.
Well, a better answer,
but he was
honestly.
Like, I was drawn to you. I was like, so that's not an excuse at all.
No. Yeah, I was drunk. Perfectly reasonable. I was drawn to you, running in the other direction, fleeing.
And then he goes, hey, how about that date? And she's like, what date? And he's like, the date you agreed to. And she says, no. And he's like, you did. You promised. You swore it. And then she's like, I changed my mind. But she's like flirting with him now.
And they're always flirting.
Well, that's the thing. It's like even in the middle of these super weird, stalky scenes, her character starts to engage it just a little bit and just a little bit until you, as a like 13-year-old watching this with your grandma, let's just say, are fully gaslighted and being like, oh yeah, this if someone's horrible to you, that's a freaking yes.
Right.
That's just
because then the scene ends with he's like, what's it gonna take to change your mind? And she's like,
I love this.
You'll figure something out, I guess.
He slipped. I actually thought they might have written these lines for her and they switched sides that day because he winds up saying, like, I'll be anything you want me to be. You want me to be smart? You want me to be strong? You want me to be, what do you want? You want me to be a big guy? I'll be a big guy. And she's like, you're dumb. I can be that. Like, instantly just like, I will make myself literally anything you tell me to be. I am a slate for you to draw upon. I am but a canvas. You are the brush. You like painting, right? Wait, I don't find that out until I take you into the middle of the street and make you lay down. right after.
Can I break down this date?
Yeah. Yes.
Because they go on a date. They go to a movie with friends. They sit apart from each other. He leaps across seats to be next to her. Apparently, she's fine with that. He stares at her, not the movie, and just watches her eat popcorn. Again, totally fine. Who isn't comfortable fine with a man lustily staring at you as you, like, move buttered, greasy fingers to your mouth? They leave the movie. They decide to walk together. Finn is like, you in love now? And they're like, maybe. And they walk into the street. He tells her, you don't know what you like. You don't know what you're doing. I'm condensing this conversation, but that is the thesis. Like, what do you like to do for fun? Oh, what your parents tell you? That's stupid. You're stupid. And then it's like, you don't take any risks. Come here and take the risk I tell you to take, whether it's what you want to do or not. I'm going to show you how to be free, and it's by stepping into this cage that I'm building for you.
This is one of the most romantic scenes in the movie, too.
Oh, yeah. Precious. He lays down in the middle of the street to watch the lights change like he used to do with his dad. I don't know. Get a nickel. Go to the goddamn movies. He gets her to lay down, and she loses herself in the moment. You know what I do for fun? You know what I love? I love painting. Honk, honk, beep, car coming. Doesn't slow down even a little bit as they leap out of the road. Oh, so what it takes for you to realize that you like painting is to be seconds from death? Honey, loosen up. You're not doing good. But that whole first date is like, your ambitions are wrong. Do what I tell you to do. You don't know how to think for yourself, but I'll tell you some options. Choose between the one I tell you is right. Also, lay down in traffic. That's the case.
Well,
and the movie, in the notebook, the next page, it cuts back to the old people, and it's like, and they were inseparable after that. Like, that's what it took? Jesus Christ.
Well, let's backtrack a minute, because while this movie does not have a surprise kiss, I don't know if that's one of the bingo things, it does not have a surprise kiss, this movie, I would argue, has a surprise date, because Noah's like, hey, Finn, arrange this thing so that I can hang out with Allie. And then they all go to the movies. It's like Finn and her friend Sarah, and then Noah and Allie. And he shows up, and she's visibly uncomfortable. She's like, what's he doing here? She's not happy that he's there. But some point in the movie, something switches. We do not understand why this happens, but suddenly she's okay with him. And then there,
it's the traffic scene, though. I think that that's where we're supposed to believe that they like bond, is like when this horrible thing happened. Like,
yeah, but the fact that she agrees to go to that point with him, because he's like, do you want to go for a walk? And she's like, okay, sure. And this is like, how? Like, why?
It's
what shift happened?
It's very unclear. Like, there, Nicholas Sparks is clearly a very stable man. Who has definitely kissed a girl before. And has, so every, every story he tells has an uncanny valley quality of like, and the girl just comes around because he's wearing a hat.
Wait, I know what it is. I know what it is. So she enters the movie being like, oh, I don't want to hang out with this guy. I'm sitting several people away from him. She watches that movie. The movie tricks her and is like, oh, this is how romance is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a man preying on you and
stalking you. I have not seen Lil Abner, but I'm tempted now because that's what they were watching.
I don't know. Right.
Which, I mean, it's safe to say any movie that came out
ever
is pro-predatory stalking romance.
If it was in theaters in 1940, I'm not sure it had a progressive discourse on intersectional feminism.
And then I just laid out in traffic and waited for my prince to come.
Yeah, so that's what I think happened. She saw the movie and then she got, because movies are very influential, she was like, oh, I guess this is how romance is supposed to be.
So it is. I mean, it's a very like predatory stalking start to this relationship in this movie, and that is so common in all romance movies and all rom-coms specifically. And I like want to make a point to not like, I think that people are so often shamed for enjoying rom-coms and romantic movies in a way that like dudes are not shamed for enjoying like Transformer style movies. And so it's like, if you love romantic movies, awesome. There's a lot of parts of this movie that I like choked up at and thought was like extremely beautiful, but
I didn't because I have no emotions. You're welcome.
Okay. She's pandering to the bingo boards. But like the predatory stalking narrative is so prevalent in both of these genres to the point where it's like, I mean, I can draw on an example in my own life of like a dude pursuing me pretty reluctantly when it's clear, it's like, oh, you've just seen this movie. Like,
yeah, it's weird when you spot quotes. like in somebody's terrifying pursuit of you, where you recognize, like, are you getting a boombox right now and coming to my house?
Right.
Like, I feel like that's where you got it. And the thing that bums me out about it is that I do love romance. I love infatuation. And I totally buy seeing someone being so taken that you just have to talk to them. And, like, finding a love that you're so passionate about, even though circumstances in your life are unsure. Like, that's such a real and beautiful situation. Like, falling in love young and figuring out a way to see it through your adulthood and your seniorhood. That's such a beautiful story. And it is terrible that these are the dominant narratives in them. Like, there are absolutely ways to meet the love of your life at a carnival that aren't endangering a woman and then manipulating her in dating you. It could start with a candy apple. Like, let's just resource. Like, you've got a lot of excellent things available to you.
No shortage of setups, no shortage of props.
Right.
We've got a lot of stuff going.
Like, the first thing you see him do at the carnival, his friend Finn wins a tiny toy at, like, one of those, like, hammer, hit a thing real hard thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we know that.
Big strong boy.
That, yeah, Noah goes on to build a fight a war and build a house with his fucking hands. Yeah. Win a teddy bear! Like, you had so many choices that weren't that.
Right.
It's a bummer that more of these movies do. Because I love that heart. I do like this movie. It's a good movie with great performances. I wish that's what they weren't performing. Like, I wish there was something better that they could have been doing.
Right.
There's like a few chunks of this movie that play into those tropes in such a direct way. And then other chunks of this movie that are so beautiful that it's just like, I wish that, if this movie had started and been framed in a different way, that would have been like more realistic than what we see. It would have been like way easier to digest the rest of the movie.
Totally. But instead, the movie like frames this like very stalking predatory behavior as romantic.
I did want to say, we were talking about this in the car over, not to justify this setup at all because it is bad and this movie came out in 2004.
It's not 1992 like it feels.
Right. Right. But I have been thinking about this a lot every time I see like a period set movie of like how so many couples in this period of time, their beginning of their love story is very predatory and creepy. I think that if a lot of like if anyone knows of like how their grandparents met, guaranteed terrifying. My grandparents, my paternal grandparents, and my dad told me this after both of them had died. And in the middle of telling me the story was like, this is how my grandparents met. My grandmother, 15 years old, walking her infant sister around in a carriage outside Brockton, Massachusetts, 1950s. Beautiful. A man, 8 to 10 years her senior, my future grandfather, spots her from behind. Cat calls her, says, "Hey, that your baby?" She turns to him, says, "No." He says, "Cool, wanna go on a date this weekend?" They're married for 5 million years. And it's just like, imagine marrying the first man who catcalled you. Like, I just... I expected better of her.
Well, in The Notebook, we see, like, all the times that she either says a flat-out no, or I don't want to, or don't touch me. She says it, like, 8 times. And
why
this like, movie basically like teaches men like, oh, just push past the no. Like,
she's
wear
just
her
being
down.
Emotional.
like ignore the no, because eventually she'll give in. Just wear her down and it's going to be romantic. Like, that's
love
a horrible, irresponsible
narrative.
Message that so many fucking movies send.
I
never
will
find
give this
out.
Movie 2 brownie points that I didn't expect. One, the scene where they try to do it and can't. I think they did that pretty well.
Yes.
Uncomfortable with them stripping in front of each other, but I am old and apparently very frigid. but they try to get it down, like in their summer of love when they're young, they try to bone. And she gets nervous and very chatty in the middle. And I think there's like a physical expression of frustration of like, oh, like, which is understandable.
Right.
But he like rolls over and they just talk for a minute. He's not mad. He's not pouty. He doesn't ask her a bunch of shitty questions.
He says, "We don't have to do this if you don't want to."
Yep. I think that's bonus points. They're also teenagers who've been rubbing on each other all summer. Like, this is a tough moment, hard conversation. I thought that that was well handled. Later in the movie, Lon, what a gentleman.
Oh my God, Lon.
Lon.
We'll get to Lon.
I kept... like, so Lana's the later horny fiance that she winds up ditching. And in the scene in which she ditches him, she is expressing her emotions, perhaps clearly for almost the first time in the film.
Except for when she was saying no to Ryan Gosling.
Right. Except for all those no's and don't touch me. But she's honest. She tells him that she's leaving. Like, hey, Lon, I'm going to go on a trip. I have to figure some shit out before we get married. That's pretty honest.
Right.
Don't have to be specific yet. You don't know what you're doing yet. Once Lon is like figuring shit out, she comes to him and talks to him, is honest, bonus point. And his reaction is pretty tempered. I could kill him, I could punch him in the nose, or I could leave you, but none of those are any good because they don't give me you. Like, oh, you're a dark, like, good job.
Even before that, whenever she's saying, hey, I have to go take care of some things. I'm going to go to SeaWood or whatever the fuck it's called.
SeaWorld.
SeaWorld.
Pressed against the tank.
In this role, Rachel McAdams is in love with a whale.
Becomes Shape of Water so fast.
Oh my God!
Don't get Jamie started on Shape
of
Water.
Oh, I know. I know what I was doing. I knew what box I was opening.
I'm Fishman Flops activated. My legs are double crossed anyway, right now. Like wrapped around each other, trying not to have to change my clothes.
Right.
The fish is so hot. It's insane.
I was just pleased that in a movie with a lot of negative like narratives that there were at least a couple points where dudes and ladies can learn some good shit.
Well, and like the scene whenever she's just like, I have to go take care of some things, and he's like, oh, are you getting cold feet? And she's like, no. He's like, but that's totally normal. Like, take as much time as you need, do whatever you have to do. Like, he's very supportive. I feel like it would have been very easy for this movie to paint that character as like, or just lazy, easy, whatever. Like, he's abusive or he's mean or he's distant or any number of things.
And I think this is one of the, because by and large, the Titanic parallels, which we should break down, by and large, the ways that it's the same are like in a way that is Titanic gets the edge. But in this way, I think it's really interesting to present the guy she's going to marry as a good guy because it makes her choice harder.
Definitely.
And it makes it more interesting to watch where like Cal, Billy Zane, no one's going to fall in love with this guy. He's a mess. And so it makes it so clear, you know, it's like, oh, well, then these two characters should be together, no question. But it is kind of like hard as an audience member to be like, oh, she's caught between a great guy and Ryan Gosling.
A lawn and a big house.
Right. And so it is like kind of more interesting to watch. I did want to get back to that virginity scene because I thought it was so, I was so pleasantly surprised at how well done it was.
Mm-hmm.
Where, yeah, I mean, you just see like positive communication between teenagers in a sexual situation, which is like, what? They're... but it's good. And then also
I'm
another.
Just glad he didn't like climb on top of her and then hang off of her and then let go of one hand. Like, just do it. Come on.
Yeah, call back to their meeting. But it was good. I mean, the fact that they're basically like, they're like, let's lose our virginity in this haunted house. It's like.
That I'm going to buy and make pretty for you.
What? Right. So we can fuck in this less haunted house later. Hot. Lots of foreplay. 10 years of foreplay.
Matt, the boy I made out with in an abandoned farmhouse, never promised me he'd paint it white and put shutters on it. I should have held out for something better in middle school, you know?
Props to making out in a farmhouse, though.
It was crazy. Drank a lot of peach schnapps in that weird building.
Nice.
Should we take this time to discuss the parallels between
I think this would be a good time to point the fact that you have a dark gray box with a white font, all bold, some underlined.
I don't know why you're shaming me for my amazing organizational skills.
There's this. Okay, so fan theory, and then we fact checked it right before we came on stage. My original theory was that Nicholas Sparks wrote the book, The Notebook, right after seeing Titanic, because so much of it is like scene by scene, kind of the same thing in a lot of places. But then we found out, because as we all know, Titanic came out in December 1997. The Notebook, the book, came out in 1996. So new fan theory by Caitlin Gill is that James Cameron stole The Notebook because he had to shoehorn a love story into his weird boat movie. And I like that.
I think that could be very... I know that that's true, that he shoehorned a love story. I mean, I think that's kind of common knowledge about Titanic, is that he wanted a movie with fancy boats and things that went underwater, but they were like, no, that's not a movie. And he was like, love story. And they were like, $40 million.
Bring in Zane. That famous Hollywood line.
Push a button, a carbonite block just comes out.
So there is so much.
All right, starting with the framing device of an old person telling a story that takes place many decades earlier.
Check.
Poor boy sees rich girl with reddish hair.
I must have her.
Instantly enamored with her. They meet and fall in love very quickly. In Titanic, it's a matter of a day. Poor boy teaches rich girl how to not be such a stuffy rich girl.
Right. Poor boy, like, re-educates rich girl. Because in both of these movies, poor people are cute. Poor people...
they play the spoons on their porch. Or under the deck of a boat.
The difficulties of the poor...
I just want to give you a soundtrack for the poor.
Well, that exact dance scene is in both movies.
Exactly.
The Newsies hat dance scene. It's like, oh yeah, poor people be dancing in Newsies hats all the time. Never mind the fact that they're fucking dying. Like they're, whatever.
Then we've got rich girl has fiance who is a rich boy. Rich girl's family disapproves of poor boy.
In that exact same scene where they have a meal with the poor boy, and they're like,
him for being poor.
Yeah, they're like, so you're poor. And he's like, yeah, being poor is cute. And they're like, well, we don't think it's cute. And then the rich girl's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Let's go dance in a Newsies hat. And that is how both movies go.
The dinner scene in The Notebook starts with waxy mustache dad.
It's more of a brunch, Caitlin. Say,
telling like a joke, being like, oh, we're all a bunch of millionaires, and yet we live with several whores. He's a feminist icon. We can all agree.
Feminist icon. 100%. James Marsden in this movie is a feminist icon, but...
Yeah, I was. Yeah, yes.
So. I think so.
He's a little creepy when he's all in the cement plaster and is like, what do you want to do with me? Like, he meets Allie because she's a nurse in New York, and then he comes back from the war all busted up. He's got a bruised face so you don't know he's cute yet, and he's in a big plaster thing so you don't know he's fit yet. And he just, like, she, like, half lifts him up, and he's, like, getting into his bedpan, presumably. He's cut down below his waist, like...
With me. And she's like, you're a zombie. Fuck no. He's like, someday I won't be. And the next scene is like, Hong Kong, fancy car, I'm better, come here.
And the twist is, I'm James Marsden. And she's like, oh, okay, sounds good. He's like, I'm James Marsden. Oh, okay. James Marsden is, we have to say, the owner of a cotton plantation in 1940. So like, there's other stuff going on with his views.
Oh, we haven't even talked about the Bechdel test part, which also is problematic with that time period in the South. But we'll get there.
Yeah,
I'm determined to get there because we will.
Because this does take place in the
what you think.
Yeah.
Just a couple more Titanic parallels that I want to get through. Rich girl and poor boy drink beer together. Mm-hmm. Poor boy's friend, whose name begins with F, dies tragically.
Damn.
This is my favorite
Damn.
One.
Damn.
This is my favorite. Finn dies in World War II. Fabrizio dies via Titanic smokestack. It's basically the same thing.
But there's one key difference between the two movies. In the Notebook, the old people die at the end. And in Titanic, Rose simply falls asleep and has a dream.
Absolutely
that's,
not. She
yes,
dies.
That's
Can
what
we
happens.
Just round of applause? Who thinks that she dies at the end of Titanic?
Well,
damn, I didn't think
who
so
agrees
either.
That she falls asleep and has a dream?
I thought I was with you there and one person clapping in the back. So it's,
dream?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Everyone,
if you stay till after the credits of Titanic, you just see Bill Paxton like holding an old lady rolled in a blanket just off the top of the boat. Sinks down with the jewel.
Yikes. Yeah. Oh, Paxton. Rest in paradise, my
One man. Of the things that I wanted to bring up, and this isn't specifically about any female characters, but it is about the portrayal of men and masculinity. Because the relationship between Noah and his dad is actually like very positive and healthy and like a very nice portrayal of that father-son relationship dynamic never see in movies. Especially of a movie of this kind. It's a period piece. It takes place in the South. They're poor. A lot of movies, I think, would be like have an emotionally abusive or physically abusive father or he's
And that's also just like
alcoholic.
Lazy writing that we see a lot is like, the daddy is bad.
Right. Mustache Dad is also, he's got that kind of like charming evil of the South where like you're positive he's racist and he's definitely misogynist,
oh,
but he's
sure.
also overtly sweet to everyone. And he's never like even unkind to his daughter. And you don't see a lot of him, but what that actor manages to portray is kind of that dad's thing of like, I know what you're doing and I know you might get hurt, but like, I love you. I know it's very small, but I kind of got like there's a little scene where he's just on the porch when she gets home. My favorite take in the movie is Rachel McAdams being scared of her father. Like she jumps. She doesn't realize he's there as she walks onto the porch and gives a great jump take that I want to loop in a GIF that I would never stop watching. But he's just sort of, he's paternal in a way that isn't negative. In a movie where it would have been really easy, Joan Allen is the more complex parental figure for Ellie. Her mom is definitely the one who is more protective for complex reasons.
She gets a little fucked bit. A poor one.
By the way, I'm not the first to express this sentiment, but I will give myself credit for novel phrasing. I'm convinced that there's a phone in Joan Allen's house that just rings every time Hollywood needs a distressed mother. It's just like a hotline directly to only her. And if she's not already on a set being a mom who's sad, she has to go to another set immediately to
They're
be
like,
a mom who's
Allison
sad.
They're like, Allison Janney's busy.
Exactly. But that dad isn't so bad either. And there's good male friendships, except for like trying to, you know, set your dude up with a date with a girl who doesn't want to go on that date. Aside from that, problematic. Like, you know, it's not the worst toxic masculinity. It's like romance toxicity. It's somehow different.
Right.
It's toxic for both men and women.
Yeah. I mean, aside from
it's
the
toxic for her.
Because it's like a guy with a great dad, a girl with parents who don't and care about her, who seems to have a level head, right? Like they're onto something here. Their kids with like there's no trauma in their background that makes them irresponsible with romance. There's something like whatever, I don't know if it's cultural. There's just something about the circumstance of romance that makes them be totally evil turds. Like
Right.
You know
like
what I'm
being
like?
Young
why does
and
a
in
guy
the class thing,
with
I
a
think.
Great dad who like reads him poetry hanging from one arm on a Ferris wheel? Like there's a disconnect.
That's true.
Like you've read poems, you've read sonnets. You should have some idea of how to treat a lady. Where's your bouquet of posies, dude? Like how many of those have you take a hike?
I know that
Whitman,
famous
man?
Walt Whitman poem about hanging off of carnival equipment. And then she was mine.
I just think romance is broken, maybe. Not families, I guess. I don't know.
I did really like the father character and like actually was a
no,
I was like,
Noah's father?
Because I forgot that he died and I was like,
it's so
that
quick. That scene of the funeral, because Noah's father passes after they restore the house together, and he is, they express that by saying it out loud, and then there's like a 2-second flash, almost like a Coke appearing in a movie theater trailer to like get you thirsty. They just throw up a flash card of a funeral. It's like 10 people in black suits facing a hole in the ground, and then it's gone. I just picture like the director being like, fuck, we need a scene in the funeral. Everybody get your suits and go outside. And then
it's just gaffers in suits. There is like, and this the only scene you see of the funeral is like people leaving the funeral.
Yeah.
It's not even them at. It's like they're like, well, that was sad.
I love the way this movie yada 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 is everything that isn't their relationship. It is totally focused on the two of them and whether or not they're gonna stay together. Other than World War II is just like, I don't know, it's like we're going to war, we're back. That's the whole thing.
They're like, Fabrizio died, that's too bad. They do fast forward a lot of stuff, but I feel like they still care. Like the characters still develop as if all of those things are happening. But because we're only talking about the relationship beats, sometimes when we cut forward, we're like, "Whoa, why is Ryan Gosling an alcoholic?" And then you're like, "Wait, everyone he loved died. That's why. And now all he has is his haunted plantation."
And a war widow to bang.
We got to talk about the war widow. She was disserviced. Whoa.
Yeah.
There's a pun there. Where are we at? How's everyone doing on their bingo boards? We've got to. Okay.
I feel like there are no cats in this movie. Cats have 8 nipples. This has been Cat Facts with Caitlin.
Are there no cats in this
Does
movie?
That, I don't think there are any cats.
Are there any dogs in
There's
this
a noticeable
yeah,
lack
there's
of cats.
There's just ducks.
There's just
they have
birds.
Curly penises.
I like the scene where Martha Shaw, who is Noah's, fuck buddy. Like, he clearly does not take her very seriously and is not serious about her.
This is like in the future.
It's after he's restored the house. He's in a big old plantation mansion all alone. Dad's in the backyard, I guess, wherever you put your old people when you're poor but have a mansion.
All of Noah's hamsters and also his father are in the backyard of the plantation.
But yes, there's a lady a couple towns over who swings by for a little sad time booty call. It's just sad people boning. Who hasn't been that person?
We've all been there.
But in the scene in which she and Allie meet, there's just an understanding of like, oh, you're the person that he used to love. Oh, you're the person that he currently fucks. Nice to meet you.
Come on
you.
In.
I feel like, I mean,
they're both very mature about it.
Yeah. Another brownie point I forgot for this movie, where two women don't claw each other's eye out like an episode of Cheaters.
Right.
She just comes by like, oh, I've heard a lot about you. I've heard a lot about you too. Let's go in while it's daylight and you're going to leave when it's nighttime. Yada, yada, yada conversations that happened inside, I guess.
But I just think, like, I think, again, like, lazy writing would have had them just, like, be very petty and jealous toward each other, but
realistically, I don't want to meet my fuck buddy's love of their life, I will say.
If I'm fucking him because my husband died in the same war this dude came back from, that's a whole other movie. It's like, the war vet fucking the war widow is a whole other kind of romance. Like, she's not there to stay. What are you going to do, live in the eyes of the memory that the war that your husband didn't come back? Yeah, tell me again what the war was like. I don't think that's
we don't care. The Notebook does like not care about the war.
Fall to winter, whatever the opposite of a spring to summer romance is. This is the dark, cold seasons romance.
The Notebook does not care about World War II to the point where why did it even take place as World War II was happening? Because it comes in at almost no point. It's like glazed over as like, oh, I guess we better address the fact that World War II happens. Also, we got to figure out how to kill Fabrizio.
Yeah, it really was like, just to kill Finn. Because she's gone by then. He just makes that choice like after Allie's, this is part of his mourning, the loss of his love.
Right.
After that year of letter writing, I don't know, war broke out. I guess I'll join the army.
Right. Yeah, him and Fabrizio are like working at some rock yard for pores. And they're like, everyone better join up. And they're like, all right, sounds good.
How do we feel about Allie as a character herself?
I like how her character is developed over time, because she starts out on top because she's repeatedly saying no, which is great. But then once she is involved in this relationship, when she's younger especially, she's very combative. But you see her kind of mellow out as she gets
older.
To the
point where she like hits him several times.
Yeah, she hits
him
a bunch.
She's physically abusive to Ryan Gosling. To the point where there's one scene where they're breaking up when they're teenagers, where she's hitting him over and over. And then there was this, I had to rewind it because I was like, did he hit her back? But no,
he hits his own
face. He also starts hitting himself. And I'm like, why are we all hitting Ryan Gosling? This is very stressful. But she hits him a bunch of times. And I was like, ooh, this is, please stop hitting Ryan Gosling. He's a national treasure. Like,
he's Canadian, so he's a Canadian. They're both from the same town. And Rachel McAdams is 2 years older than Ryan Gosling. I'd like to point that out, because usually the Hollywood age gap has a male man being many
a
years
old.
A man.
Hollywood full of male men.
The man being like years and years, sometimes decades older than
especially
his
1940s love romance with a 17-year-old girl. That guy could have been 50 and it would have been like, yep, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Strictly speaking from a Rachel McAdams perspective, she is, I think, awesome in this movie. This is also the same year that Mean Girls comes out. Like, her two biggest, most different roles came out the same year. She's awesome. I love her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry. That's it. we can go home. No, Allie is a character. I don't know. I mean, there's a part of her that is a little bit like rich girl underwritten for me, of just like, she's never really struggled. And then just sort of like, why does everyone like her so much? Why are we all like dying to, I don't know.
She paints.
That's another thing. It's like, oh God, what a lazy like trope of just like, but she wants to be an artist.
No, I mean, she doesn't say I want to be an artist. She says I paint for fun.
Right.
Like, there's no ambition beyond just like hanging out with a canvas, I guess. Like, it's not like, and someday I'd like to be in a gallery. I don't know. I give them out for Christmas. Like, it just seems like.
And that's used as sort of this weird
leveraging point of why we should favor Ryan Gosling over James Marsden, because Ryan Gosling leaves this series of literal arrows leading to a canvas, and then she paints in the nude.
Because,
and it's like,
he tells her how to have fun.
Right, right.
Like, he instructs her with physical arrows where to go to have a good time. This is your recreation.
But, and also, it's like, at that point, it's like, imagine if someone was telling you, hey, you liked doing this 10 years ago. You probably still love it. It's
like, somebody sets up a Dance Dance Revolution pad and a PlayStation 2 for me.
I know you, right? But then we're supposed to think, oh, James Marsden doesn't get it, because one day she shows up at his office in the middle of the day and she's just like, I used to like painting. And he does not tell her to get the fuck out, which is what he should have done.
That's such a bullet. Oh, man.
James Marsden's a fucking champ, because she's so, like, and both of them, to their other romantic partners, but especially Allie, are very, like, emotionally careless towards them. James Marsden has done nothing to deserve, like, her going off for a week and cheating on him for a week and then coming back and being like, I don't know. And then
I just feel like someone different when I'm with him.
Right. And I'm just like, oh, that's something that people who cheat on you who can't be trusted would say. But it
is a lifelong romance founded by teenagers on a summer fling and then infidelity. Like, those are the two bedrock moments of their then lifelong relationship.
Hot.
So that fight where he, like, Noah's like, this is gonna be a lot of work. We're gonna have to work at it every day. Like, yeah, dude, you started this on some rocky ground, not at your job.
Well, and also, you got
a lot of trust to build, buddy.
They have this exchange a couple different times where they're like, we fight all the time. That's okay. like when they're teenagers, they're like, there was like a voiceover, like, all they do is fight. Cut to Rachel McAdams hitting Ryan Gosling incessantly. But boy, did they kiss nice. And then it's like, no, that's not what a good relationship is. And then they say it again 10 years later. All we do is fight. That's fine.
I would have loved to see her pop out of dementia at the end and spend the 3 minutes she had cognizant just like, is this the candles that you're putting out? These are our nice candlesticks, you idiot. Just berating him.
I wanted to mention that, as with most mainstream Hollywood movies, this is a very hetero movie.
This is
a very white movie.
Oh,
all the main
dad
characters.
Was gay as fuck. What are you talking about? Allie's dad is totally gay. Hello. Southern dandies married to pretty ladies. Head to the South, y'all. It's happening all the time. That mustache daddy. He gay.
Queer icon mustache daddy for all you bingo boarders out there.
I feel like that's the subtext of Joan Allen in the Car. Like, I could have married this poor, virile, beautiful boy.
Fuck man.
But because I was in love with him, I married your gay father. We both needed a beard. I love him! But honey, you get it, right? Like, you saw the mustache.
That's very implicit and not especially.
It is not explicit. I'm definitely deciding that that's the case.
And for a movie that takes place in the South in 1940, race is not touched at all.
Oh,
it
yeah,
is
it
not,
is.
It is.
Oh, a lot of actors of color got an extra day rate. That's super nice.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of background characters. And there are the only people of color who have lines are the help. One of the lines is, I would be happy to pack your bags.
Yeah.
So,
and that is the
start.
Only person of color that I noticed who actually had a name. Was was the servant in the house in the 40s. So that's the only person of color with a name, because there are two nurses that we see in the forward scenes with the old people over and over. There are two women of color who work at the nursing home.
That sounds like even seem worse than a nursing home. Oh boy. It's infectious. The whole table has it. The whole table can't speak.
But they're we see these two characters for a lot of the movie. We see them in almost every scene that the old people are in, never find out their names. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. And that's just like careless, stupid writing.
Can we get there now? That's why it doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Let's get
to
that.
You want to wait?
One last thing I wanted to say is that we've got some other tests to address.
Okay, good.
I wanted to just say that as it relates to the character, the people of color.
Bechdel.
Oh!
Bam, 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 bam. Hand it over, baby. Someone's got a Bechdel. Someone's got a... Give it up for our first bingo winner.
Congratulations.
Bechdel bingo.
Anyways, what else do we have to talk about?
Well, so I wanted to finish my point about, so the people of color in the movie, we were talking about the Bechdel test. There's also the Duvernay test, which requires that people of color in the movie can't just be supporting the white characters in the movie. They have to have their own realized lives and stories and backstories and everything like that. So this movie does not
pass.
Yeah,
in this movie, every person of color is literally seen serving a white person. There is not. There's.
Although we do see, apparently, Noah and his father have several black friends because there's that scene where they're all dancing together.
I don't. That's like.
I mean, we don't. Yeah, we don't know anything about them, and they don't have any lines.
That's also just used to imply like those rich snobs. They buy the black people. We play spoons with them.
But there's we would be remiss to not say that several times in the movie, James Marsden owns a cotton plantation.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, cool, he's successful. And it's like, he's 100% racist. There's no way around it.
But it's okay, the Bechdel test. By the Bechdel cast version.
It technically does.
But you had a compelling argument.
So I think that because we were talking about this beforehand, I think I think you had a really good point that it does come to a matter of subtext where our version of the Bechdel test requires two female identifying characters with names talking about something other than a man for two lines of dialogue. But that gets
very
tricky.
Low bar.
And so basically it's safe
it
to say that
it shouldn't get tricky. If you're at the point where that bar, if you're squeezing something under it, it doesn't fucking fit.
Okay, I because the scene we were talking about, the subtext is so
the one scene that you could even use to suggest
is between Allie and her mom. Right after Allie and Noah are out late trying to fuck, doesn't work out. So then her parents freak out because she's out late. And then they say, we're leaving tomorrow and you're going to college. Great. Normal reaction. We're vacating the mansion because you got fingered one time. Very chill. So we see the scene with her and her mom the next day, and they do have several lines. Do you have the actual lines of dialogue?
Yes. It's
in your novella?
It's basically something to the effect of she's seen like cars getting packed up and she's like, what's going on? And her mom's like, we're leaving. And she's like, we're leaving now? She's like, yes, sit down and have some breakfast. And then so Willow, I think it is, will pack up your things.
So that's where the argument comes in, is like they are not explicitly saying we're leaving now because you got fingered in a haunted house last night by a guy. But I do agree that that is the subtext of like, that's what's driving this whole scene is the you know.
I would even, like, I don't know if it's subtext because to me, Allie's response is like, I'm not going anywhere is like, not because I like the seaside. Like, I'm not leaving. Like, have you smelled this coastal air? It's because she didn't get to slide down the pole. She wants to give it another shot. But the only other scenes with women who talk to each other are in the retirement home, and it is none of those nurses have names.
Right.
None of those scenes are more than two lines anyway.
Those can't pass.
And this is a movie with Joan Allen, Rachel McAdams, and Gina Rowlands in it, and you can't find a conversation for any of those actors. Those actors could read the back of a Cheerios box, and I would weep.
So I have a few more scenes that could pass, or that have women characters interacting
with each other.
Two female
characters.
Allie talks to her friend Sarah a couple different times, and one of the scenes, Sarah is telling Allie about Noah, does not pass.
God, that seems so annoying too, because Allie's like, isn't it so weird how he just threw himself at me? And she's like, no.
That's like, just what? Noah.
Later on, whenever Noah shows up to the surprise date that he has orchestrated, Sarah goes, you remembered Noah, don't you? And she's like, doesn't pass. They talk about a man. A scene later on when they're like playing in a body of water.
Birds.
No, birds are not present here.
No birds.
There's a rope that they're all swinging from.
And oh, God, that scene is terrifying.
Sarah's like, get in the water. And she's like, I can't. Maybe passes.
That is honestly the closest one yet. But I forgot about that scene. Ryan Gosling, she's afraid to jump off the rope swing. And Ryan Gosling is just on the side like, do it. Go for it. Get in the water. Do it. Go for it, baby. Get in. Just try it, honey. You'll have fun. Get in the fucking water!
Jump, baby. Other scenes where women interact. other scenes where women interact. Allie is chatting with her college friends about James Marsden. We do not know any other names, and they're talking about a man. Allie is in a group of women at her wedding dress fitting. They're squealing about the dress and the wedding, but we do not know any of their names.
And then she passes out in her wedding
and they faint.
Because she's on the top half of the newspaper, and then it flops down, and poor Noah's under the fold with a picture of
poor man renovates haunted house.
It's like rich girl getting married. Poor boy does something?
Another contender for passing the Bechdel test is when old Allie meets all of her female relatives. Obviously, they know who she is, but she doesn't know who they are.
It's all his. Like, those are the kids that they made in their relationship. I don't think, like, what's your name again counts when they're the literal. If it was a character like someone else's family, maybe that's me stretching, but, like, reintroducing yourself to your kids when you have dementia and your husband is right there is still kind of about your relationship.
That's a tentative pass.
In that case...
And also, I think that... Oh God, and I hate that we have to get so into the weeds of, like, what is a pass? But the fact that even if the daughters in that scene do have names, which I believe they do at some point, she doesn't know their names. So it can't pass if at least the women talking don't even know each other's names. So also, that I was like, that can't.
I think that's very ableist of you, but...
Those kids only come in to be like, Dad, stop taking care of Mom. So they also only talk about their relationship. Like,
that's
true.
Yeah. And also, what hateful children. Don't you hate how Dad loves Mom?
I know. They're terrible. I will say, I'll give this movie credit as a film. It is very focused on telling one story that, although we've criticized its negative aspects, is very beautiful. It's a love story over time. And it's
nice.
It is just about the relationship of these two people. And in the movie, no one talks about anything else. So it's a weird movie to apply the test to because no one has a conversation about anything else. It's not like two women in the movie would have an opportunity to be like, did you admire this silver spoon? Its detail is quite exceptional. They talk about nothing except for whether Allie and Noah are going to fuck forever. Right. That is the sole focus of the film. An accomplishment in storytelling. It is a very focused, well-crafted story with not a lot of fat to trim. Again, that scene with Martha, after Allie shows up and War Widow comes cruising in, knock, 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 I brought you a pie, wink, wink. Allie opens the door and is like, come on in, let's chat. And again, the next scene is like, it's dark out. They just yada-yada through all that conversation. They don't talk about anything that isn't just the two of them.
Would that scene pass the Bechdel test, though? He's right there, and the context of their conversation is like, hey, we both have kissed the same man.
We're Eskimo sisters. Let's make cornbread or whatever.
Oh, wait. Oh, the bingo board has reminded me of something I wanted to talk about. That this movie originally, the Steve Buscemi test is basically just a framework that makes it so that because Ryan Gosling is the one, you know, Ryan Gosling, notorious Hollywood hunk, is the one displaying all the predatory behavior at the beginning of this movie, we're conditioned by movies to think that because he's so hot, it's okay. So the idea being if we sub out Gosling with Buscemi, or just someone not considered Hollywood hot, it immediately registers as not okay. Where if Buscemi shows up in the rain saying, I wrote you every day for a year, you call the cops. And it's like, not a question. So that's what that is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's alarmingly true in this film.
If you sub out...
This only flies because they're, like, both hotties.
Anyone who's not... Right, if you sub out Rachel McAdams with someone who's not alarmingly hot and she's just hitting Ryan Gosling, you're like, no, this is... But I feel like, especially when this movie came out, probably that behavior on her part barely registered. It didn't register for me at all. I forgot that she was hitting him all the time they were teenagers.
You know, it occurred to me that what's kind of beautiful about being unconventionally attractive is that even if you're rich or poor, if you fell in love at 17 as an if you're a Buscemi and a Lady Buscemi, and you meet each other.
Oh yeah, the Greta Gerwig
and
film.
And you fall deeply in love, and you come back to your mother and father, like tooth jutting out over your lower lip, nose hair visible, whatever your problems are. Uh-huh. Like, Daddy, I found love. Like, you don't. Yeah, congratulations. We don't give a shit if he works at a lumberyard. This is the best.
he's got a hump
on his back. He's just got, like, you know, he's bald but wrong. It's just on the sides and not on the top. Like, you know, they're just all like, whatever. I'm so glad you love our beaver tooth daughter. Congratulations. I'm going to buy you that mansion to restore with your huge hands.
I do want to pitch to our certainly all industry audience my new film, Lady Buscemi, directed by Greta Gerwig.
Sacramento, it's a coming of age story of a young Lady Buscemi.
It's a companion to my famous Tony Danza biopic, I, Tony, which will also be coming out in the coming year. So check out, I'm going to take these movies led by women and replace them by men.
I do want to see Tony Danza land a triple axel, though. Tony Danza's mom, parrot, the spa haircut.
Everything else is the same, but it's Tony Danza.
Shall we rate the movie on our nipple scale?
Oh, sure.
So we have a nipple scale where we rate the movie based on its portrayal of women, 0 to 5 nipples. This is going to be tricky for me because aside from the first 15 minutes, which are very problematic and very irresponsible in the way that they depict like a budding romance, the rest of the movie, I don't think does that badly in depicting a romance. I think I want to give it 2.5 nipples.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, between like the like noticeable lack of toxic masculinity, again, aside from the first 15 minutes of the movie, the way that you depict Noah and his dad's relationship and other male characters. I mean, why am I giving credit to them? This is not what this podcast is about.
Except for Gay Mustache Daddy.
I guess Allie is a character I appreciate. She's generally pretty well developed, I think. She doesn't fall into a lot of tropes that you see in romantic stories. Some of them, yes, but overall, I think she's like pretty dynamic. I mean, she's one of two main characters. She's helping to drive the story. She's making choices. She has agency, but you know, the movie's not perfect for all the reasons that we've already discussed. So yeah, I'm going to 2.5 nipples. One of them goes to Ryan Gosling's nipple that is exposed in the movie.
That is the only nip we get.
Right. One of them I'm going to give to Fabrizio from Titanic. and the half nipple I'll give to Gay Mustache Daddy's mustache.
Sick.
Yeah, let's give him a mustache. That's actually very forward-thinking of you. I would accept a glass of milk from the mustache nipple.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I'll give it 2.5 as well. For all the reasons you stated, I think that the other female characters we see in this movie, even the ones that are better developed, like Allie's mom and like Martha, are really, I mean, and again, it's kind of like what you're saying, Caitlin, Gil, that it is because it's just such a focused story that there's not really a B plot at all. The yeah. B plot is the main characters, but older.
The B plot is like Finn, who's there to set him up on a date once and then die in a war. That's the entire... Right.
That was his entire orbit, too.
It.
Pretty
yeah.
embarrassing. Set people up on a date one time, later killed in World War II. But like, I think that there's little things this movie and this story could have done more to better surface its female characters, mm-hmm. such as not having the best friend only say, like, you should go with that guy who's threatening to kill himself if you don't go on a date with him. The mom beat, even though I didn't totally dislike that scene where it's like, at least we get a scene understanding where the mom's coming from and she's not just totally villainized. But the fact that it was just like, I fucked a poor person once too, big mistake, but what a great dick. Like, they're this is just weird. And I also really don't like how the women of color in this movie are treated, where they're, I mean, every woman of color in this film is in a service position and only one of them is given a name. And that is annoying, especially considering that this movie takes place in the South, and it's just like, it's just this weird, bizarre blind spot where it's okay. Like, it's like, this movie doesn't have to be about race, but it's like, if it, you know, give your characters a name, give them something to do, give them, you know,
So for that reason, I'm going to give it 2.5 and give one nipple to Allie because I do like her. She goes on a, you know, journey. She, for a rich girl, I don't want to fucking kill her, I guess. So that's good.
That's honestly, that's true. That is a solid point.
Yeah. One nipple to Allie. I'll give one nipple to James Marsden, who, like, feminist icon James Marsden in this movie. And then I will give a half nipple to the wonderful nurse who's constantly restraining old dementia Allie, whose name we never get to learn, even though she has to discover them dead. Not fair. Anyways, so that's those are who I give my nipples to.
I'm with you.
I'm going to give it 2 because I am frustrated by something I didn't see but felt implied, and you had such great actresses there. I would have liked to feel this tonally in the movie, even in 2004. So much of Allie's choice in the film is between, you know, her heart and her common sense, sort of. Like, she has this uncertain but passionate relationship with this guy who built a house for her, and a very steady relationship with a guy who's literally named Lawn. like, by the time she has to make that choice, I, as a film watcher, only feel the tension of those two relationships. When in reality, that character is in a much, like, a larger context of her family and then the context of the stupid world we live in, where a lot of her choices aren't about her heart or her head. It is circumstance that, like, Allie's parents do have a complicated choice to make. Realistically, they're not crazy for thinking their daughter shouldn't be in this impulsive romance.
At 17,
both for
yeah.
circumstance and other reasons. And her mom especially, like, waiting until that scene where mom takes daughter to go look at the dude she used to fuck to reveal, like, the complexities of the heart there. These are women trapped by choices that aren't made by the men that they're in relationships with. Like, everyone is kind of stuck here. Gay mustache daddy can't be out. He has to marry Joan Allen. Like, everybody's got a circumstance binding them, and I wish when it got to Allie's choice between these two boys that she gets to fuck forever or whatever, I wish I didn't feel any of that weight. There's no greater social, like, I know he yells at her, like, forget what other people want. What do you want? What do you want? And we're supposed to think that's romantic. But, like, I guess the answer comes in a book about feminism in the 60s. Like, what she wants is to not have her only choices be which guy to marry. Like, what's not on the table is, like, going to college not to find a husband, but, like, maybe learn something you want to do. What's not on the table is, like, wearing pants. Like, you know, there's so many things she doesn't get to do.
I'm pretty sure she majors in English, too, because the one scene we see her in college, the professor is talking about Walt Whitman. Hey, do you think Nicholas Sparks likes Walt Whitman?
I wonder.
I feel like Nicholas Sparks and, like, Mitch Albom have this timeshare together where they just, like, jerk off for, like, a week every year, and then at the end they're like, it's a book, we did it.
That's five, the real notebook.
The five notebooks you meet in heaven.
So those are, I wish that there had been a little bit more influence to that greater choice, because it better understands mom's choice to hide the letters and not marry the hunk. Like, for such a closed story, I wish a little bit more of the world had pushed its way in, because I think that would have made this character of Allie more real, and Rachel McAdams is certainly capable of giving you a character with more. So it was Joan Allen. Yeah. There was just something missing from the women, because all their choices were only about men. And I guess that's implied. Yeah, duh, they don't get to make choices about anything else. But there's no pain from that. There's no weight from that in the film.
And also,
they're literally birds flying away. Like, so it's hard. That's why I can't give it that extra half nipple. And it's why, even though I love love, and I think it's beautiful that you want to be in love forever, and I think love is hard work, and relationships are tough, and it takes two devoted people who are passionate not just about each other, but about their relationship, to actually die in a hospital gurney together. Like, that's really beautiful. And I said, don't think it's crazy for women and men to want that. I'm not inherently, like, monogamy is whatever, but if it's what you want, do it. Do it for real. Do it like that. Be birds together. But there's so much more that goes into that choice, especially in those circumstances for that character. So two nipples, and they go on either side of the Ferris wheel.
Beautiful symmetry. And to the point, I think that is also possibly because it is a love story written by a man, mm-hmm. that those points aren't addressed. It's like,
and the point of view character is Ryan Gosling.
That's true.
Pretty much the protagonist of the story.
This whole time I was arguing, I was like, oh, is Ryan Gosling mansplaining Rachel McAdams' own life story to her the whole movie? But it turns out it was her notebook. So
I love That's the theory that we talked about where you just mastered her handwriting and wrote the whole thing. And then you were an idiot and you yelled at me. But I stuck with you anyway, you forgetful old lady. That's like the end of it.
Love Rachel McAdams.
There's a scene where he's looking through a photo album of like their life together and it's pictures of young James Garner instead of Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams.
So
like,
weird.
Why wouldn't
And it looks
just...
nothing like Rachel McAdams.
No.
I'm like, see, like a Michael Jackson black and white fade out of their faces becoming one. Like,
this is another thing stolen from Titanic. The Titanic at least tries to Photoshop. This real hack job in The Notebook of two people we've never seen before. And then he's just like, oh, this is nice. I'm like, who are these people?
I do feel like that's fan service for all the grandmas watching it with a 13-year-old on TNT who've been the whole time. Like, they've had to watch James Garner, their sex symbol, their Ryan Gosling, in an old folks' home taking his button down off to be in the doctor and this wife beater. And he's got this, like, oh, at one point, I'll make this very quickly. I'm glad old people got to be sexy in this movie.
Yes.
I really love sexy old people. I think sex when you're old is passionate and beautiful and so great. And I hate it when movies act like it's gross, and I thought that was really sweetly handled. She wakes up from her dementia, they dance for a minute. It's very romantic. I like giving old people credit that they still rock hard because they bone down.
Oh,
y'all, they bone down.
My
you know,
grandma,
the fastest, where the places where venereal diseases are spreading the fastest is nursing homes.
Yeah, my grandma was the horny. Jeez, rest in paradise, grandma. Horniest American woman I've ever met in my life.
I got
horniest woman.
Much. Yay!
Great. Hey, thanks for coming to our show.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Caitlin Gill, for being our guest.
Thank you, Caitlin and Jamie, for having me.
Thanks for coming, and
thank you,
we'll see you later.
Bye.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.